Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on 100.2 FM, Freeview 277, and online at bizradio.co.uk.
On every day.
Because she's interrupting.
Is this your intro?
I can't get a word in.
I know. Is this your intro?
I can't get a word in.
You know why?
Why?
I've had quite a lot of grind coffee this morning.
Grind coffee?
Mm.
Was that like in a disco?
No, grind is a nice little indie coffee business.
Do you ground grind?
I do. I buy it in beans and then I grind it myself. I used to hand grind, actually, but now I've got a little electric
grinder.
Hand grind, yeah.
So you get ground grind.
Yeah. In fact, you know the new husband's going to Lagos on Saturday. I've got a whole week.
He's going to lay what?
He's going to Lagos.
Oh, Lagos, right.
Nigeria. And my dear friend, Bosun Amofoye, who's out there, he's a TV presenter out there. I'm sending him, because we love coffee. He loves coffee. We tweet about coffee to each other. So I'm sending him some grind. I think it's a bit odd to send a Nigerian coffee, because I think they have really good coffee out there. But
right, yeah.
I'm going to send him some from London.
Is that like bump and grind?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
Without the bump.
Right.
But what else would you send a Nigerian person from England? No, come on. What would you send? Like, what, a little English thing?
Your bank details.
No, don't be rude. Come on. Do not tar everyone with the same brush. He's a lovely guy. He's a TV presenter. He's very wealthy. I'm sure he's got a lovely house and family. Yeah. So what would you send? Would you send them some lavender or something English?
Something quintessentially English.
Yeah, marmalade.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Satsuma marmalade.
It's quite sweet, the Satsuma marmalade, which is why I have it with a round of almond butter.
Jar of Marmite.
Jar of Marmite?
Marmite, yeah, jar of Marmite.
Well, I do like the crunchy one, the Marmite with the peanut butter.
That's gross.
I absolutely love that. Yeah, yeah. Have you had it?
Never tried that.
Well, this is where you're going wrong. Yeah. It's absolutely delicious. You know what? It's genius. It's salt and it's fat. So you're going to love it, aren't you? Marmite and crunchy peanut butter. It's absolutely delicious.
I can't see how you... I really like Marmite and I really like peanut butter. I wouldn't eat them together.
Have you tried it?
No.
Oh, well, come on.
But I'm not going to try it.
You can't say you're not going to like something you haven't tried. Now, that's got my goat. I actually thought you tasted it and didn't like it.
Okay, I'll bring my chili dynamite Marmite and you can have some of that.
I've never had that.
Ah, so you've never tasted it, have you?
But I'm not saying I wouldn't like it, am I?
No, but you wouldn't.
Right, next week I'll bring in my crunchy Marmite.
And I'm going to bring in my dynamite chili Marmite.
And we'll have a little taste live.
She poisoned me live on air, Adam.
Once.
When she came back from China.
All right, go on.
Yeah, she bought some stuff off a street vendor. I think it was minced bat or something. Yeah. and literally, she bought it in Wuhan. She had a jar that this street vendor had filled with a chili sauce, and she bought it in and gave it to me and made me eat it on air.
And that made you ill?
It went purple on air.
I had to go to hospital to have my my throat hosed down.
It's the only way I can get him to quieten down, to be honest.
Did you not have to declare that when you brought that back?
No, just brought it in my little suitcase. Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like you should have done.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And it wasn't long from then afterwards that we all locked down.
Wow. Yeah.
We found the source.
Yeah.
You know the thing I found weird about China? So we were in... I am talking to you, but I'm trying to scroll already because I shall be videoing you, see. So you've got Natalie taking pictures and videoing. You've also got me, because when you talk I will be tweeting out your lovely you. But when we were in mainland China, what I found, now I've got a camera in front of me now, it's very disconcerting.
It's disconcerting, isn't it?
Yeah, you don't know whether to, you know, carry
play
on
to the stuff. Camera play to
I
the
know,
camera
yeah darling, you must know me. So in mainland China, Adam, are you listening?
I am listening.
We were in a very remote area by the river,
yeah,
and we were on a little moped. And it was really, really remote. And we went by the river. Do you know, there wasn't one insect, bird, nothing. You'd expect to see kingfishers,
of course,
fish, and birds, nothing. Absolutely nothing. I was talking to somebody about it because I've become friends with the Green Party, you know.
Okay.
I've got their board up in my front garden.
Good for you. First time ever. Good for you.
Yeah. Because they're helping me save bushes. I've got a problem with my bush.
We are not talking about your bush for the third week running.
I've got a problem with my bush, but I'll tell you that off air because he'll get uppity. But so they're helping me save because Canterbury Council have been chopping down everything.
Right.
you know, natural habitat where I live in Tankerton.
Oh, okay.
Do you ever come to Whitstable?
I do drive down that way occasionally. It's nice down there.
Yeah, but,
it used to be until I grubbed it.
I put the
right. Anyway, Sevenoaks Chamber. We hope you can join us for the next Chamber Sustainability Forum. We've been all through this every week with her and her.
Yeah, you should have listened last week
and the week before and the week before that and the week before that. We hope you can join us around. See, you. This is what you need to be involved in, Jules. Not this silly Green Party nonsense. We hope you can join us for the next Chamber Sustainability Forum on the April the 26th. We want to bring you together local businesses that are passionate about sustainability and those that want to expand their knowledge. You ought to start one of these in Tankerton. The forum will be the place to share best practice, ask questions and explore actions that members have really taken to become more sustainable. If you want to find out more about this event or to book your place, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
Okay, I will. I'll have one.
You'll have one.
I'll start one.
I would. Sustainability Network. You can put pressure on them then.
Yeah, I will.
Good.
Sorry, I'm doing a tweet ready to have Adam's interview. Don't do it yet because I've got to set this up.
I'll read another one of these then.
Yeah, go on.
Tunbridge Wells Networking on April the 20th, 10:30 till 12. It's the third Thursday networking. You can't, that's not easy to say, is it? Third Thursday
not
networking.
Not with your horse teeth in.
Well, especially when there's a lisp on everything. Third Thursday's networking in Tunbridge Wells will be hosted at the Old Auction House and sponsored by Welland Jones Funerals and Memorials on April the 20th. Places are free to chamber members, that's the Sevenoaks Chamber, and guests can join the meeting for £15. If you want to find out more, sevenoakschamber.com/April Tunbridge Wells.
And the lovely Wayne Cunnington's listening in and he's WhatsApped me.
Wayne's back.
Yeah.
Wayne's back on Twitter with his own Twitter account.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw it.
Oh, his own?
Yeah, he's back as Wayne.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, he said, I'm going back to right to the beginning of the show now, if you remember what I was talking about the catamaran.
Catamaran.
Yeah. I don't know why I say that. Maybe because I'm from Essex. He says, I'm calling the RSPCA cat on a meringue.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what a wag. And he's listening from his sunny garden. So he's got his own Twitter handle back. Oh, wow. That's good.
Cool. So yes, he's back with his own Twitter handle.
Who knew?
Right, you can do one.
Well, there's a prestigious historic building. No, it's not. It's a prestigious historic business centre, and it's on the market with a guide price of $2 million to $2.2 million. I hate it when they put guide prices like that because you're never going to pay $2.2 million if the guide price is $2 million. I know that much about finance, Adam.
I'm going to pop an offer of 1.8. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Agents say the Grade Two listed St Augustine's Business Centre in Westgate on Sea is a large and attractive property. The building, which dates back to the Victorian era, your era, is being auctioned by Clive Empson on Thursday, May the 4th. So. It's a business centre. Do you know about it?
I do, yeah.
Thought you might.
It's a fabulous building. It's a it's an old Victorian building. It is listed, so, and it needs maintenance, and that's the problem that you're going to have to maintain. It's a gorgeous building. Basically, it's just offices is what they mean by a business centre at the moment.
Doesn't sound very nice.
Yeah, well, it's
just offices. Doesn't sound very nice, does it?
Well, that's why they
call it. Good
job he's not.
Well, that's why they call it a business centre, isn't it?
Good job he's not an estate agent.
Yeah, but that. That's.
But it's a nice building.
It depends. I have to explain this to you.
Is it yellow brick?
I have to explain to you whether you're buying or selling. Yeah. If you're selling, it's an upmarket Victorian Grade Two listed business centre. If you're buying, it's a broken down office. Right? Do you not understand this?
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any grounds around it?
Coffee.
No. Is there any garden around it?
No.
Do you know, I'll tell you what got my goat. I went to the garden centre to get something for my mother. And I've become quite into eco, Adam. And they had there a bottle of weed killer to kill dandelions and buttercups.
You don't want to do that.
People buy this stuff. Why would you buy it? To kill a little dandelion or buttercup.
You can eat dandelions.
I do.
I know you know,
you see me.
Yeah,
I have a leaf a day. I do. As long as the dog hasn't, been there. Anyway, so that building's on sale. So we've got Reeds. We've got all these 3 million.
It
things.
Is a nice building, but it will take a bit of
would you
restoration.
Buy it? Why don't you sell your Tenterden and move in there, live there?
No. Anyway, It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show for the very first time, Mr. Adam Letts of Letts Wealth Management. Adam, thank you for joining us. I can only apologise. I'm so sorry for the start of this show and where we've got to here.
It's been fantastic so far, and thank you both for inviting me along. It's been
We love guests like this, don't we?
Yeah, he's nice, isn't he? Yeah. He's tolerating you. Adam, thanks for joining us. I want to kick off by asking you to just give us a bit of background into Adam. We've already decided and found out off air, I think, that you're a Colchester United supporter.
And
you're off to the game against Crawley later.
Crawley Town, yeah.
And he's got his shirt and everything lined up. Yeah, he's got a scarf and everything.
I'm hoping it's going to be warm enough not to have a scarf.
Do they still have a rattle, or is that old-fashioned now?
Occasionally, we've got a drummer who tends to turn out.
Because I used to go with my uncle and have a rattle.
So the thing about the lower leagues football team, you've still got terraces and stuff like that, haven't you? Have they got terraces at Crawley? I'm not sure if they have.
Temporary stands last time I went, so certainly at Colchester it's all seating now. But they are talking about bringing some of that back,
which
would be nice. Absolutely.
But really, in real life, he's a financial advisor.
He certainly is. So I want to find out a bit about you and your background, and then we'll talk about the business and what you do now. So give us a bit of an overview of Adam.
Okay. So I'm married. I've got two boys, Harry and Ashton.
Hello. Nice names.
Harry should be working. He works at McDonald's at the moment, or just off the M20.
How old is he?
He's 19.
Okay.
He's university in October.
What's he going to study?
He wants to study law.
Handy.
Looking at probably Cardiff or Exeter is his first choice.
Or Exeter. My youngest son had some friends. He went to Bristol. He had friends at Exeter. They loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lovely place. Mm. But both seem good options for him. Mm. Youngest one, hopefully, is at school. He's bunking off. So that's Ashton. We live in Sutton Valence.
Right.
Lived in Kent since 1998 when I graduated from university. And actually, going back to what you were saying earlier, I studied environmental sciences at university.
Did you?
So, funny enough, in a tenuous way, that's how I sort of ended up working in financial services, really.
Right.
So.
There's a link there somewhere.
There's a minor link. So, I studied more of the management courses at university. And then when I finished up there, met a girl, moved to Kent. That didn't work out. And now found a shinier girl and married and all that sort of thing, which is great. Started working with a company who were sort of really working with their IFA relationships and sort of try and promote social responsible investing. And off the back of that, I became more and more interested in the financial side of it, which is why I sort of branched off into financial advice, really. So that's how it all came about from there.
And is it your passion, helping people?
It is, yeah. I think if you ask me the reasons why I do what I do, I enjoy that sort of personal relationship, working with people. What I try and do is take all the jargon out of financial services. There's so many words and terminology that people find confusing. I think it's one of the most complex industries that you could work in that respect.
And of course it changes all the time. You think you get your head around it, and then something changes.
Absolutely. We've obviously seen that in the budget just recently with some of the changes that have occurred around pensions.
Yeah, what did you see in the budget, Adam, that you pricked your ears up with anything?
Well, there was some big changes around sort of pensions. So I'm sure a lot of the listeners will have seen that. There's been changes to what we call the lifetime allowance. So that's effectively been abolished, which means that people can now save more into a pension without potential tax implications at retirement. There's also been relaxation around the amount that you can pay into a pension each year. So historically, the maximum you could pay in with tax relief was £40,000. That's been increased to £60,000, which I think it's been met with a bit of negativity around the fact it sort of favours those that are high earners. But I think when looking at it a different way, it's inviting some of those highly skilled individuals back into the workforce, those people that retired early.
Absolutely. And of course, what people never figure into this when they talk about stuff like that is that money isn't just sat around doing nothing. If you put 60K into a pension, it's going to be invested in somewhere.
Absolutely.
And that investment is going to grow the economy for everyone.
We definitely need at the moment.
Well, people do have this tendency to look at things on one side rather than in the round of what everything does. And of course, they also, when you don't have to comment on this, but it's just me having a bit of a rant about it. You know, I saw some idiot politician this morning on Twitter giving it large about something or other, and I just thought, you don't know what you're talking about. They were talking about attacking the rich so that they could pay doctors, and I thought, you do know that most doctors are, in fact, the rich, yeah? The average wage of a GP is £98,000 a year, and you're saying anybody that owns over £80,000 should have their money taken away to give to doctors. Well, that would be taking it away from them to give it back to them.
Saying that with the junior doctors, I was shocked by their wage, because I pay a cleaner £20 an hour.
Yeah.
Okay. And a junior doctor gets, what,
£14.95
or something?
Yeah.
That's tough, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, I'm not demeaning a cleaner either, because you know, if you get a good cleaner,
but you have to be careful about things like this, because the trouble is, when you look at something like that, is your cleaner doesn't get an indexing pension.
No.
And a junior doctor does.
Yeah. If my cleaner's ill, she doesn't get paid.
Yes, but your cleaner also is always going to be a cleaner. A junior doctor isn't always going to be a junior doctor. You know, it's a progression, is what I'm saying. I think it's too low. I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that they shouldn't get more money. They should. But you also have to be careful about this. It's not as quite as, you know, well, if McDonald's get £14, why shouldn't, a junior doctor get £148 an hour or whatever? And in fact, some of them do, because a lot of junior doctors now work as bank doctors as well. So when they tell you they work 70 hours a week, what they don't tell you is they only work 35 to 40 hours on their £14. The other 30 hours are done at £250 because, silly amounts of money. I was actually talking to a doctor about it on Twitter about this. And
did you ask him about your ailments while you were on there?
We were just talking about the fact that because there's a shortage of doctors, a lot of junior doctors actually work very long hours because they double shift. Mm. Yeah, they go and work in a different hospital as a freelance.
Well, when I was last at A&E, which was October at Ashford, for my AstraZeneca damage.
You were there longer than I was.
I was there 21 hours.
I was 19 hours the last time. You were 21.
I was 21 hours there. And the doctor was yawning as she spoke to me. She sat down next to me
But to be fair, Jules, to be fair, we all do that.
And then she went off because the alarm went. She went off, resuscitated somebody, left me in behind a curtain, and then came back, you know, still yawning. And I said, do you want to go and have a coffee or something? You know, you've just resuscitated. She said, no, it's fine. You know, she said she lived and just carried on. Yeah. It was like, I mean, I don't know how they do it. But yeah, 21 hours is not fun.
No, absolutely. Anyway, let's
back to
talking to Adam. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what are you advising people? Got any snippets or tips for pensions? What would you advise?
Well, it comes down to individual circumstances, really. I mean, we talked about the sort of maximum that people can pay into a pension based on the sort of the budget from last the autumn budget. Obviously, not everyone can afford to pay £60,000 into a pension on a basis. It's about trying to establish what is affordable to an individual, but also making it as tax efficient as we can. I know we've got a lot of business owners and directors on the sort of on the air at the minute, and so we're looking at ways in which we can make that most tax efficient in terms of reducing corporation tax and reducing personal taxation. Mm. You mentioned earlier, obviously, that it's about sort of trying to build up a pension pot for your future and that sort of thing. The other thing that people seem to sort of don't spot is that by trying to create these tax breaks and that sort of thing, it also takes off the pressure from the state as well. There are a lot of positives in what's been announced. But going back to your question, it's we work with clients, whether it's regarding retirement planning, investment planning. We're doing a lot of work at the minute around sort of tax and estate planning. Those that are reaching their later years, as it were, trying to do some intergenerational work, speaking to their children, grandchildren about how we can best pass on assets. Because we live in an area in the southeast where property prices are so high that such a large proportion fall into that category that there's and it's about preparing for that rather than when we get to that sort of finals
absolutely
stage, can't do anything.
It's another one of those things that that's too easy to dismiss, as wealthy people, when in fact what you're looking at is the value of an asset. And the value of that asset, as you quite rightly say, Adam, in the southeast is extortionately higher than it would be in other parts of the country.
But try and scale down.
But basically, you get people, you know, especially really old people like your mum and my mum, that haven't actually got any money.
No.
They've got no liquidity.
Yeah.
They've got no money. They live on a pension.
And they're shocked by the prices.
Yeah, but they can't do anything because they have assets of £400,000 because the house they live in is just worth that on the market.
Yeah.
But if they sold the house, they wouldn't have anywhere to live, so they still wouldn't have any money.
Well, my mum did look at scaling down, and even to buy a two-bedroom flat in Tankerton is, like, you know, more or less the same as her house.
Yeah.
So
there's
no point in scaling down.
One of the interesting things that I want to talk to you about, Adam, and you were making reference to the fact that, you know, about putting money into a pension scheme. Of course, as a lot of our listeners are business owners, and they would have paid themselves dividends. But
absolutely,
that is getting harder and harder and harder. You can pay the dividends, but you just pay an awful lot more in tax than you used to.
Indeed.
You know, this year, in this tax year, you can have £2,000 worth of dividend tax free. Next year it's £1,000, and the year after it's £500. Yeah, so it's going down and down and down. So from a business owner's point of view, I think the better option now, rather than dividends, is pension payments.
Yeah, I mean, it's always about getting the right balance. And actually, as we've moved into a new tax year, that reduction to £1,000 is now the current tax year.
Yeah.
And as you're right, it goes down to £500 next year. So, I mean, I think certainly accountants are making change with regards to their advice around how to take salary and dividends out of the business. But yeah, particularly for those that are looking to the future long term rather than short term, a pension is a great way to sort of take money out of the business in a tax efficient way and provide for your future. The other thing that people fail to sort of realise also with pensions, and I don't want to just talk about pensions all the way through this conversation, is that any money that's not spent for a pension is also free of inheritance tax as well. So it's also a longer term tax planning tool as well, which works really, really well.
Okay. As you say, though, you don't want to do the whole thing about pensions. So you just step us through some of the other things that you do in Let's Wealth Management. What are some of the other things that you help people with?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a broad range of clients. We've got clients from the age of 18. We've got children on our books as well.
Excellent.
With regards to the juveniles and so on and so forth. All the way through to those in the sort of 80s, 90s, which are obviously more the sorts of clients we would work with regards to inheritance tax planning and that side of things. We cover a broad range of areas. So within the business, it started out with myself. We've grown to a team of around about 12 now.
Well done.
Thank you. There's myself and three other advisors. We've got Dean, Darren and Wayne. So Wayne offers us some mortgage advice. Dean and myself offer advice around equity release.
Right.
But primarily it's all about sort of assessing everyone's financial needs in a holistic way. So we look at starting the building blocks of financial services tends to be around sort of life insurances and protecting people's future.
Yeah.
So we look at income protection, critical illness, life insurances, protecting debts. We do that with individuals, but also business owners. Protecting people's businesses is also a key part of what we look after as well. Building up to sort of savings on a regular basis, monthly, lump sum investments, pension planning, tax and estate planning, equity release. We're for a broad range of areas, and for those areas we don't offer advice on, such as we don't specialise in sort of long-term care, for example, we've got relationships with other companies who can offer that support as well. But I hear lots of people talk about, you know, have we got enough to invest, and we tend to view things on a basis that, you know, an acorn grows into an oak tree, so we tend to work with everybody, and actually some of the best client relationships I've built have been from starting point that are now flourishing and growing.
I think not enough people understand the power of compound interest, and how something small, because you talk to lots of young people who go, oh, I can't be bothered with any of that, you know, I don't need any of that, I want to go on holiday to Ibiza, you know, I'm going to blow my money on that. But the fact is, you don't need to have a lot of money to start with. If you invest it, and you invest it wisely, it grows of its own accord. And I want to kind of ask you this, because a couple of people have said to me about this. If you did something like sold a property and downsized, so you got a bit of cash, or you sold a business and you had a bit of cash. People go, well, you know, you, if I put it in the bank, I get nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. 0.25.
And they won't let you have it out again.
Yeah. Yeah. And just while we're talking about that, Lloyds Bank, thank you, have put my mortgage up for the fifth time in 4 months, but I'm waiting for the savings rate to go up, which hasn't moved at all.
No. Yeah. I know.
Difficult, that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm actually going to withdraw cash today. Because
good luck with that.
I'm going to try. Because my new husband tried to withdraw £2,000 from Lloyd's in Whitstable High Street, and they said we don't dispense cash anymore.
Really?
He had to drive to Canterbury to get it. But I'm going to be paying more cash to people.
But I wanted to ask Adam about this because, you know, and nowadays I come across people that have leveraged some money somewhere, and they don't really know what to do with it. You know, we kind of have an idea about pensions, but is that something that you can help with, you know, where to invest it, an investment fund or something? Because you don't have to have a pension to invest in an investment fund.
Not at all. No, I mean, a pension is just a type of investment, and there's a whole host of different options that you can look at. I mean, we would certainly recommend that people get a balance between monies they have, not only in cash but also investments.
Yep.
Having all in one or the other is not the right approach, generally speaking. Mm. That said, you need a level of liquidity within your finances to sort of meet immediate needs and sort of emergency funds and so on and so forth. We tend to sit down with a client, find out their investment experience. We look at what's called your attitude to risk, so that the level of risk
For risk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you've probably seen these things, a scale of 1 to 5, and you have to sort of decide where you are on that scale.
Yeah.
And we tend to spend quite a lot of time talking through that with clients, because it's key to make sure that, okay, in an ideal world, we want high returns with no risk. That's where you want things to be. But
exactly. You don't want the risk.
That's not reality, is it?
Yeah.
And whilst interest rates are a little bit better now, there are some better rates out there, they're still not keeping pace with inflation. So we can look at numerous investment types, whether it's ISAs, unit trusts, investment bonds. Mm. The list is fairly endless.
Mm. Yeah.
But the type of investment wrapper that you use tends to be dictated by what you're trying to achieve. Mm. I mean, largely beyond a pension, ISAs are a great option, as I'm sure you'd agree. But then it comes down to what the purpose is for that money, and that's what we do, and that's what I'm saying. It's a bespoke service, and we just look to try and establish what the client's short term needs are for those funds, or the medium term, long term, and then build a plan around that. There's no one size fits all, really.
Yeah, absolutely. You made reference earlier, and I just want to come back to it so that people understand. You talked about equity release. Mm. Just step us through what that means.
Okay, so...
Because it had a very bad name, didn't it, years ago?
Yeah, it did. And my experience with equity release goes back to sort of when I was working with Norwich Union at the time, now Aviva. Mm. And back then, equity release was only available through Norwich Union and Northern Rock. And obviously, Northern Rock, we know what happened to them.
Yeah.
It's now a much larger market. Equity release has to be viewed with caution. It's not right for everybody.
Yeah.
But in the right circumstances, it can help meet your needs in retirement.
Right.
So for those that haven't had the ability to prepare as they would perhaps want to, or perhaps circumstances have changed in retirement they weren't expecting, it can be a fallback position to help meet needs. Now, equity release can provide lump sums of money. Mm. It could alternatively provide a regular income in retirement. And whilst the interest and capital can be repaid over that term between when you take out equity release and when you pass away, equally it can just roll up and therefore be paid upon death from the proceeds of your property.
Right.
It's only available to those over the age of 55.
Right.
And obviously those that own their own property. But as I say, it's something that I think is becoming more and more of a sort of mainstream option, particularly with people living longer and people wanting to enjoy their retirement more so.
While they're able to, absolutely. While they're fit, rather than waiting till they're 90 and can't perhaps do what they could do in their 60s and 70s.
Well, one of the common areas we tend to see people working with is those that have interest-only mortgages and get to retirement, haven't got a means of repaying that debt, but don't want to move. And it presents another alternative to be able to stay in your property and maintain the family home, really.
All right. Okay. So just explain for those of us that are dumb exactly what equity release means. You own a property, but you're going to take some of the money out of it.
Yeah. So broadly speaking, let's take a typical situation. So if someone owns a property that's worth £300,000.
Yeah.
They either have got a capital or income need that they need to fulfil, and based on your age and the property value, there's going to be a maximum amount that you can take out of that.
Right.
Okay. Now, what we'd always say is only take out what you need, because obviously as soon as you take money out, interest starts to accrue on those funds. But in essence, the company that makes that loan to you would only expect to have that money repaid either on death or for the second person of any relationship to go into long-term care. So it's just an alternative way of providing finance that... Right. And, you know, we've already talked about the fact we live in the South East, property prices are high.
So intrinsically, you're taking a loan against the value of your
absolutely.
House.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just a mortgage, really. It's all it is. But it's one that doesn't require necessarily to make the monthly payments, and it also doesn't necessarily require payment until death.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, it is an attractive proposition, but as you say, it's got to be right for you.
Yeah, I mean, when I started working with Norwich Union, I think interest rates were slightly different back then.
Yeah.
We're going back to sort of early 2000s, and I seem to recall that the interest rate that was applicable to equity release dropped below 8%, and we had a bit of a mini celebration, which was odd looking back now. But there's much more competitive rates out there now. You're looking at sort of maybe 3 or 4% interest rates, you know, and... you know, that can either be fixed or it can be variable and we can reassess it. So, very flexible.
Oh, interest rates. Some of us are old enough to remember interest rates. I got my first mortgage in 1979, and in May of 1979, I was paying 8% on my mortgage. By November of that year, it was 17.5%.
Ouch.
Yeah. Because we had very variable interest rates in those days.
I don't remember back then, I must confess. I'm a little bit younger than yourself, but I've heard stories of that, and wouldn't we kill for sort of savings rates at that sort of level now?
Exactly. Well,
it never seems to filter through, does it?
Yeah, there were two things that happened there that kind of mitigated the pain of that quite a lot, which is if you had savings, the mortgage I got from, it was from the Nationwide Building Society.
I got mine.
In those days, you took a mortgage from a building society, not a bank, because it was in the days before they carpet-bagged building societies. You had to have savings to get the mortgage, but you were getting like 10 or 11% on your savings.
Yeah.
So it was mitigated by the fact you were all, you know, if you could save a few more quid, you were saving money. And also, there was a thing called MIRAS, Tony Blair...
Yeah, I remember MIRAS.
Tony Blair was the most dangerous person in the world. He killed everything, I think. He removed MIRAS. MIRAS was mortgage interest rate at source. Mortgage interest relief at source. So basically, you could offset your mortgage interest with MIRAS, and then Blair ended that. The government at the time ended that and stabilised interest rates by going for this zero interest rate approach. But of course, that kept saving rates low, which means that you got poor investment, basically, because people wouldn't invest money because there was no returns on it.
No.
So just to finish off, Adam, about the kind of things that you offer, I want to just understand your business a little bit more. You've talked about what you do.
Absolutely.
And you've intimated that there's a few of you involved in this now. When did you launch the business?
So we just came up to the 8-year anniversary in May. Eight years.
8 years, yeah. Well, okay.
So I'd worked with various sort of large companies in the past, Aviva I've already mentioned, and Legal & General. Started the business back in 2015. I'd moved from a sort of advisory role previously into management, and I was keen to get back dealing with clients.
Right. Okay.
As a business, I didn't sort of have any sort of fixed plan in terms of how it was going to grow. But in essence, we now look after over 500 clients.
Wow. Okay.
And our service is not sort of a transactional one. We sort of meet with our clients at least annually to review the progress of their plans, make changes, et cetera, and manage their monies, really. It's grown from myself, and then my wife joined the business, Vanessa, who'd actually worked in financial services like myself. Previously, we met at work back in sort of 2001, so that's where our relationship started.
Right.
And then since then, I recruited Dean, first off, as an advisor. More recently, we've got Darren, who's joined the business around about 18 months ago.
Right.
And then we did a business acquisition tail end of last year, which is part of the reason that Wayne's joined the business as well. He's been a fantastic addition to the team.
Okay.
In terms of the back office, we're based at Turkey Mill in Maidstone.
Don't
know if you're familiar, but yeah, it's a
Location. I'm very familiar with Turkey Mill. I will tell you why in a minute.
Okay,
yeah.
Look forward to that.
Yeah.
We've got a great team. We were very fortunate. We've got Cara, who's due back from maternity leave this week, so a big shout out for Cara coming back. We've got Kate and Purdy, who are our power planners, who do all the report writing and make sure we dot the I's and cross the T's.
Right.
We've got Ellie and Beth and Hannah, who do the administrative support side of things. So we're very lucky. We've got a great team. I never anticipated we started things up 8 years ago that we'd have a team like this and that it would have gone so well, really.
Cool. I just want to ask you, if I may, because you made reference to it there, and I'm interested for all kinds of reasons. You made an acquisition.
Yes.
If you don't mind, you don't have to tell me in and out details, but did you deliberately go to look for an acquisition, or was it something that came up and you thought, oh, we could do that?
We deliberately went to look for an acquisition.
Right.
So we got to a point where the business effectively grew through word of mouth, which was one of the things I'm most proud of, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And it got to a point where I needed some support with regards to some of the clients and managing that to make sure the service didn't suffer as a result.
Yeah.
So we brought in Darren to complement the business.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, we knew that we needed to bring in some additional clients for him to work with as well.
Mm-hmm.
We explored a number of options, and this one was the best fit, both in terms of the client type, which was a nice marriage with the existing clients we already had, but also geographically it suited us in terms of where they were situated as well.
Because do you do home visits, or like a doctor, or do they come to you?
I would say, I mean, obviously in lockdown we moved to sort of
Zooming.
Zoom and Teams and that sort of thing. I'd say 70% of our meetings take place at the client's home.
Right.
We've also got a meeting room at the office as well, which some people prefer to come to the office themselves. And then I'd say probably around about 20% of the clients we sort of tend to deal with online. Most of our clients are sort of London or South East based, although we have got clients as far afield as Devon, Cornwall and Edinburgh.
Which you can do with Zoom and Teams, I think.
Really, really smooth, so yeah.
And the business that you acquired, were they for sale at the time, or did you find them and make them an offer they couldn't refuse, if you see what I mean?
They were looking, so the situation with them was that there was two advisors working there. One of them wanted to retire.
Right.
The other one didn't want to continue with the business, but we'd put the feelers out with a number of businesses, so we'd had that conversation with them sort of 2 or 3 years prior. So there was a 2 or 3 irons in the fire. This one came up at the right time for us. There were others that we've obviously had to put to one side, and I'm sure they'll do other things. But it was just mutually beneficial.
Cool.
I was going to ask. We had a listener request here from the lovely Natalie Benaise, who's filming us. She said, "What about life insurance?"
Yeah.
She wants to know about life insurance.
What is it? I mean, it'd be interesting to know.
Ask Natalie. She's there.
Well, she hasn't got a microphone.
Well,
so
she can shout.
It's known as a very good investment in France. There's no tax and not such a bad interest. So what is the situation here in the UK?
So it's known as a good investment in France. No tax is what Natalie's saying from the corner.
Okay.
Maybe not here.
So life insurance itself tends to only... Well, it tends to pay out, obviously, on death. That's when life insurance tends to pay out.
Is that the case in France, Natalie?
Yes. But you can generate interest during the lifetime.
Yes, so there are investments. There are investment types, and they're known as sort of non-qualifying life policies or investment bonds, which do have tax advantages. So again, we can invest in funds. And we talked about ISAs and unit trusts. So an investment bond is an alternative investment type, which is particularly relevant to those individuals that are higher rate taxpayers and likely to be non or basic rate taxpayers in retirement. And those that potentially want to generate income for the future as well. So they are very attractive investments, although we would tend to look at ISAs as a first port of call often. This is true, yes. There are ways of mitigating inheritance tax and investment bonds as well.
Life insurance is another one of those industries that has had a bit of a rocky past. Many years ago, I worked for a chap called Mark Weinberg, who owned Abbey Life, and I worked in policy servicing, where I regularly got my face punched in by very unhappy customers because there was a lot of mis-selling went on in life insurance policies back 20, 30, 40 years ago. It was all unit link nonsense, and people would be schmoozed into taking out a life policy at extortionate premiums, and then they go, oh, I can't afford this anymore, go to surrender the policy, only to find that they still owed huge amounts of money. And there was a big furore about it in the 80s, and a lot of life insurance companies were shut down for being a bit dodgy, basically. But it was a big thing back then, because there was lots of they were unit trust policies, and you were supposed to make loads of money out of it as well as having life assurance, and it didn't, basically, is what happened. So the market kind of collapsed for a while because people got very unsure about whether it was a legitimate investment or not.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, things have changed massively since then.
Oh, of course. Mis-selling
scandals and that sort of thing. The regulation is so much more tight.
Yeah, well, back then, there was no financial conduct authority. Absolutely. There was no qualifications. Anybody could rock up and be a financial salesperson, and, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, that episode inspired the formation of the Financial Conduct Authority and proper regulation of people that were selling financial products, quite rightly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Adam, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Well,
thank you so much for
fantastic.
That. If people want to find out more about your business, what's the best way to contact you?
By all means, you can contact us either through the website, which is www.letswealthmanagement.co.uk, or contact us directly in the office on 01622 470101, and we'd love to hear from you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that. All of those details are on the Kent Business Radio website, so if you want to find that out, go to the website, and Adam's website and contact details are there. Brilliant. Thank you so much for that. I said I'd tell you my connection to Turkey Mill.
Go ahead. Go on.
Right. First of all, I need to ask you, what part of the mill is your office based in?
We're currently based in North Wing, which is the bit as you come down the drive under the bridge.
Okay.
Directly ahead of you. Yeah. So you come under the railway arch.
Yep.
There's a little walkway which sort of goes across the road, and there's a big tree on the left-hand side, and we're literally in the courtyard just down below there.
Okay.
What, you're looking worried now?
No, I'm visualising. I'm visualising whether you're in the dryer shed or the offcut shed. Yeah. Okay. One of those.
I couldn't tell you. It's one of the older parts of the building. After.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to go back in time to July, end of June, early July, 1970.
Okay.
When I rocked up at school, at what was then Venters Boys School, and is now the Valley Community School.
Were you in shorts and little grey socks?
I wasn't, but...
little scabby knees.
No, I wasn't. And this is going to make you laugh like a hyena. The headmaster walked up to me and he said, if you're going to turn up to my school with hair that long, I don't want you back.
Oh.
I went, sounds good to me.
And walked out.
And I walked out and I crossed the road and went to the bus stop... And while I was stood at the bus stop, there was a bloke nailing up a sign that said, staff wanted Turkey Mill. I walked across the road, and there was me, 14 years old, and two other lads, and the general manager conducted an interview, which consisted of the three of us standing with our back against the wall, and I was the shortest, so I got the job.
Was that going up the chimney?
No, it was going... I was a machine room boy. In the machine room, which is the room that's in the far left-hand corner of the site.
I know you.
Yeah. Yeah. I worked in there. That was the main machine room. And I was the machine grease boy. And my job was to crawl in the machine while it was running, and oil and grease the bearings.
Gosh. Wow. Health and safety would have a field day nowadays, wouldn't they?
As a 14-year-old, I worked 12-hour night shifts as well, which was illegal then, let alone now.
Wow.
Yeah. So I actually worked at Turkey Mill when it was a mill.
I think I know exactly where you worked, and there's the cafe there now.
Cafe would be next door to
it. They've still got some of the old machinery out there in the courtyard area. Yeah, yeah. So,
well, funnily enough, because it was Dougie Lawson, who's one of the owners of the site. He invited me to a celebration they had. Was it last year or the year before? I can't remember when it was. A couple of years ago, anyway, which celebrated their 25th anniversary of holding the site. And I went along to the lunch there as...
very nice.
I can't remember the chap's name. One of his partners in the business, anyway, he's been working on the history of the mill. So he and I spent a few hours walking around with me pointing at things and going, and that was that, and that was that, and that was that. Yeah.
Wow. One of my clients actually does talks on the history of the mill as well. So, yeah.
Really? What's his name?
Best not selling there, but...
Oh, okay.
It's a fascinating place. It was actually... when I worked there, it was owned by the Pitt family. If you remember Pitt the Younger and Pitt the Elder that were Prime Ministers of England.
I don't think I'm that old.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You would have known them intimately.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 1760. You know, yeah. You were a girl then. Interesting place. They used to make the old white £5 notes there.
Okay.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah. Did they? Okay. Wow. Yeah. The old print room.
Yep. So, Turkey Mill, lovely place.
Taking it back.
I did have a thing. I had a thing for a long time that I wanted to finish my working life where I started. By having by having an office at Turkey Mill, basically. I didn't want my job back. That wouldn't have worked.
I don't think you'd fit in that machine.
Well, the mill was closed during the 72 miners' strike anyway, because it was coal powered. And when the miners went on strike for a 43% pay rise, it put us all out of work. Thank you very much, chaps. But no, I always intended to have an office there eventually, but for one reason or another, that's not possible.
I've got a little tweet from, a WhatsApp message from Wayne Cunnington, who's listening in his sunny garden. He says, wow, how many countries have you mentioned on today's show? And I learnt so much about you today, Jules, that I never knew before you love to eat. Who knew?
Oh, Wayne, you're not paying attention, mate, are you?
But do you know what? I met him for the first time in London, and I took him out for lunch at a lovely Turkish restaurant near Victoria Station. Yeah. So you know very well that I love to eat, Wayne Cunnington.
Mm. have you got anything? We've got 2 minutes before the
end of
the show.
Well, there's more than 3,000. I approve of this because it's not on farmland. Mm. More than 3,000 solar panels are to be installed at Bluewater to help power the complex.
Yep.
Planning permission has been granted by Dartford Council for the huge installation of panels on flat roofs at the shopping centre in Greenhithe, which is what I've been screaming about. Why don't they put panels on existing buildings instead of on farmland?
So they're going to pay attention to you now.
Well, it's a bit late, but yeah, hopefully.
I'm going to tell you about a couple of upcoming workshops with Social Enterprise Kent. How to write the perfect grant application is a workshop taking place in Margate. And you can book by going to sektraining.org.uk. There's a mental health first aid training ideal for anyone aged over 18. If you would like to gain knowledge and skills to spot signs of people experiencing poor mental health and how to become a mental health first aider, and it's being staged by West Kent Mind, the charity for mental health. And the next courses are on the 17th, 18th, 24th and 25th of May from 9:30 to 1, and it's online, it's delivered via Zoom. If you want to find out more about that, westkentmind.org.uk, I want to learn, is the website to go to.
And this is really interesting too for farmers, because we're really worried about food security in the UK. So their government grants are offering between £1,000 and £25,000. The grants will support improvement in livestock health and welfare. It'll enable farmers to bring new equipment onto their farm, and that's been shown to have a positive impact on health and welfare. So you can go to www.gov.uk/government publications Farming Equipment and Technology Fund. So that sounds really, that's some good news. I like that.
Cool. Did you read the tweet from Tracy Ferguson?
No.
Very interesting and informative business bank conversation with Adam on all things financial. I'm so glad I opted again for a fixed rate mortgage a couple of years ago. The cost of living is really hitting us hard, but it's one less thing to worry about. And she says, great tips from Adam. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I agree. Mm. We could talk to Adam. We should have Adam on once a month for some tips.
Think?
Oh, yeah.
I think that would work, wouldn't
it? You kind of, you know, it's only when you talk to other people and they go, well, I've just got this, or I've just paid off my funeral, you know, thing. And because funerals are going up,
you paid off your funeral.
Well, my mum wants to prepay her funeral.
I've already got one of those,
but I won't let her because I she needs her money. You know, she's spending money on. But, she's seeing a herbalist next week. That's £75.
Yeah, but it's a real bonus. I took out funeral arrangements for my mum.
Mm.
Well, my mum took it out. It was hilarious. we did that 2 years ago. It cost $5,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, that funeral,
crazy.
That funeral, if you needed it today, would be $8,000.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll go and do it then.
Yeah, and my mum's still going strong. So,
it's a fixed price then, even if funerals go up.
Once you've paid for it, it stays at that price no matter what. Mm. Yeah. I'm sure there will be some people who try and get out of it eventually, but they can't. You've got a contract. But the funniest thing was when we were doing it, my sister and I were doing it, my mum, and the funeral director was going, So Betty, what music would you like at your funeral? I don't care, I'll be dead. They're making me pay for this.
Yeah, I've already chosen my funeral music, and I've actually got a playlist on Alexa.
Oh, I bet.
My funeral music, so whether they'll do it or not is another thing.
Yeah.
Moat Park Cafe is open for visitors. They say it's the Maidstone Borough Council, and they're delighted to announce that the new Moat Park Cafe is now open to the public, and the new building is situated in the perfect spot for those who want to sit and enjoy a bite to eat while taking in some stunning scenery.
That's all right for Adam. He can nip over the back wall of Turkey Merlin to the cafe there.
It's 440 acres of woodland. And
not the cafe. Moat Park is.
And there's a new learning centre and cafe as well. It's the second phase. So,
Right, we've reached the end of another show.
We have.
That's quick.
Yeah.
We told you.
Yeah.
We warned you.
I know.
He'll be back, won't he?
He will. We will have him back.
Yeah.
We will. Yep. I want to say a huge thank you to both our guests, Ursula Carney of My Wage, and to Adam Letts of Letts Wealth Management. To everybody that tweeted, emailed, and sent in your details and joined in with the show, thank you so much. To my gorgeous, stonkingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Serkin, and to the equally lovely
Natalie
Beneg, our filming guru for today.
For bringing in a flurry of French culture.
Absolutely. We'll be back with another show next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.